Welcome to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies, with your host, Jeff Urbanchuk.
Welcome again back to Engineering Influence, a podcast from the American Council of Engineering Companies. Very, very pleased to be joined today by Sean Courtney of Bloomberg News, another extremely good example of reporting on infrastructure, which is timely, informative, and really matters, especially to the business community who we represent, the CEOs, the people who care about what's going on in Washington and how it affects their business. Sean has appeared on the front page of the Washington Post. He's also written for the Investigative Reporting Workshop, Washingtonian, AOL News, and Huffington Post, among others. So it's really great to have her on today. Welcome, Sean.
My pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, we are in kind of an interesting time because we've lived through yet another infrastructure week.
It's true. We survived.
and we're pretty much exactly where we were the last infrastructure week.
It feels kind of like a Groundhog's Day almost, which is unfortunate.
Yeah, which kind of goes to what's the mood like right now with the Hill? I mean, after that meeting, what's the takeaway?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody who was hoping that there'd be like a deus ex machina and like Trump would somehow come through with a magical funding suggestion is pretty deflated at this point and resigned to the fact that if there's going to be any kind of infrastructure legislation, it'll have to be the surface bill that they have to pass before September 30th of 2020.
I guess the surface bill, FAST Act 2 or FAST Act Plus or however they really want to call it, I mean, that's still out there. And that's probably the best mechanism to get this done. I know that Chairman DeFazio also kind of has an interest in a larger policy bill that kind of puts a lot of his, ideas from, the last Congress and before that, and then also potentially pennies for progress and things like that. Do you see that shaping up anyway, or is that kind of taking a sideline to we have to just focus on reauthorization?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he wants the reauthorization to be his big policy bill. He wants it to be a game-changing reauthorization. He's not looking for incrementalism, which I think is more what the Senate is moving towards, especially given how quickly they're trying to advance their bill and that he has just been starting with a lot of these hearings. Pending for progress, obviously, is in the end up to Ways and Means. And so I think he's looking to do a heavier lift rather than just, scrounging around for some funds to cover the Highway Trust Fund, which is what I expect the Senate to do.
Yeah, and that's one of the things which is interesting for some of our members who don't follow everything that closely is the fact that the policy piece coming out of the Hill, especially on the House side, that's, T&I, and that's an authorizing committee. When you start talking about revenue, that's Ways and Means. So that's two separate committees hopefully working together to try to come to some kind of compromise to get something done.
Right.
The same in the Senate. So it's a little bit more complicated than just putting together one bill and dealing with everything.
It is. And, the other thing that people should be looking at or thinking about is the appropriations process, which we're going through right now. Just next week, in the next week or so, we're going to have a markup of the T-HUD, the Transportation HUD spending bill for the next fiscal year. And that, if you talk to any appropriators, they'll tell you that's the infrastructure bill because that's where the money's coming from. And that's what your members will be seeing sooner than they'll see anything out of a FAST Act, a reauthorization, or anything along those lines.
And even though the Senate kind of created the budget with kind of a carve out to address the Highway Trust Fund, there's no guarantee that that's going to actually be addressed in any of the appropriations actions that they take.
Well, no, that's true. The appropriators will have to find funds from somewhere, and it's up to Ways and Means to allow them, I suppose, to appropriate from the trust fund, or they're going to have to appropriate from somewhere else. So it gets messy really fast. I guess if you're trying to be a little bit of an optimist and worrying about what's going to happen, at least there's an appropriations bill that's in the process and there's some money that's coming along, which means something for business in the short term.
Yeah, there is something happening, which is the positive thing. And it's kind of interesting to see where things stand after that White House meeting where you had the president essentially saying, I'm not going to play ball until you stop all the investigations. And of course, you have presidential politics kind of also feeding into this. Do you think there's anything that can happen that would get the president back to the negotiating table with Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer, or is it just kind of dead in the water.
I mean, he would just have to have a change of heart. I don't see there being any internal pressure from within the administration to move anything. You know, there are a lot of concerns with congressional leaders that Mick Mulvaney was going to kind of derail their infrastructure negotiations. And you know, it seems like perhaps he was effective in getting that done when the president decided to walk out of that meeting. I'm not entirely sure what it would take to get him back on board. I know it's unfortunate, but you know, the stranger things have happened. I think that's the one thing about this administration is that you can't always call something, you know, the end of the story. Things can always come back and he can change his mind. So, you know, there's always that glimmer of hope, and a lot of groups are kind of hanging on that at this point.
Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of, you can never really tell week to week exactly what's going to be happening. The one thing that the president never misses an opportunity to talk about is, you know, the fact that he made his billions as a builder,
right,
building things, and how important infrastructure is. And the one thing that we hear from the Hill, from everybody, from Steny Hoyer says it to, you know, rank and file, the chamber downtown, everybody says that nothing's going to happen without leadership from the White House.
Right. I mean, everybody seems to agree with that. It just seems like if you talk to especially Senate Republicans, I think that maybe they weren't necessarily looking for leadership, especially on a gas tax from the president. You know, it might have put them in an uncomfortable position, actually, if he had backed it. So I think while there are a lot of groups pushing, a lot of strange bedfellows, as you mentioned, you know, you have the Chamber of Commerce and then you have labor and you have the Trucking Association and labor, and like they're all pushing for the same thing. But it just seems to fall on dead years, and part of it, I think, is congressional Republicans who are concerned about the optics of having passed this tax bill and then raising taxes on the average person.
Which is an interesting thing because, of course, you know, we know that historically there have been more Democrats in Congress that have been pushing for a fix to the user fees than Republicans. And when the Republicans come out, they generally have to modify it or come up with another idea, asset recycling or something else, which is not directly an increase in taxes. But at the state level, we've been seeing a lot of activity. You know, over 30 states have dealt with the revenue question for them, you know, for their own states. And it's not all blue states. You know, there's a good amount of red there.
Right. There's a range. And you even see referendums. And then maybe that's part of it. I mean, I guess we could have a national referendum on if we want to have the gas tax. But barring that, I think it's hard. But I think that is part of the reason why you're seeing this, is that people are signaling to their leaders that this is something that they're willing to invest in because they've been told where it's going to go.
Yeah.
And I think that some people would say that at the national level, there's a concern about they're not sure where that money is going. And because earmarks are not a thing anymore, it can't be like, hey, that extra 5 cents you're paying at the pump went to fix that bridge in your neighborhood or in your city.
Which is kind of brings up kind of two separate issues, because at, you know, the question I always have is with all the states kind of taking it on themselves to do this, does it soften or weaken that age old opposition to increase taxes? If you're a Republican in a Republican state with a Republican governor who's done it, you know, is that enough political cover to say, well, maybe I can actually go and vote for a user increase?
Yeah, I mean, I think for some people it could be. There's been some suggestion from conversations and no direct, you know, confirmation from Senator Roger Wicker, but it seems like he might be open to the idea of maybe passing a gas tax increase. And he's from a red state. He's a Republican and he's the head of the Commerce Committee, and he'll have a role in passing a service bill. But then there are others who are just kind of look at the states raising their own taxes and saying, well, that seems right. The state should be paying for the roads. They own most of the roads. So why shouldn't they invest in them? So good for them. Leave it up to them to invest.
Exactly. And that's kind of the interesting balancing act. And, you know, it's interesting because I think all the groups are coming together and they're saying the same thing, that you got to fix the trust fund. You have to increase the user fee or, you know, index it. And it just doesn't seem to be moving the needle as much as we need it to. Is it a question of the same old, or is it does something new have to happen? Do you see anyone out there that's kind of bringing up a new idea, or is it just kind of, you know, the same thing?
I mean, it seems it's mostly the same thing. I mean, it's different groups, right, that are, as we're saying, that are pushing for it. But it's the same people that you would expect to be concerned about raising a user mm-hmm. fee, especially in the Senate. And I think a lot of it falls on the lap of Leader McConnell, who has said that if the president backed a gas tax increase and said that an infrastructure proposal was his priority, that he would support it if mm-hmm. there was support within his membership. But he is not coalescing people around it. Mm-hmm. And that's a really key person. I mean, he kind of runs the show. As much as Nancy Pelosi is in charge of the House and she is leading the conversation on a lot of these things, the House can only do so much, mm-hmm. and then it falls on deaf ears in the Senate. Yeah. And so that's really the problem and trying to convince him, especially when he's up for re-election, I think is a tough road to hoe.
And that kind of goes into the personalities of the chambers, because you're absolutely right. I mean, in the Senate, really, it's Leader McConnell who would have to really drive the conversation and get his membership behind him and reach a consensus to get something done. And on the House side, it's a little bit more regimented, I guess, that you have, of course, Speaker Pelosi running the show. And of course, Chairman DeFazio really, you know, working on the committee side. How much flexibility do you think that Chairman DeFazio has to kind of follow his policy goals? I mean, has he been given a fairly clear lane to move, or is he, being held back by leadership at all?
Oh, I don't think he's being held back. I mean, I think he'd like things to be moving more aggressively than they are. And I think that maybe not with the House, but he's expressed some frustration, I think, with some politics in the Senate. And I don't think he's just talking about Leader McConnell. Yeah. I think that there's a little bit of frustration perhaps with Senator Schumer based on just some comments that he's made. Schumer was saying that if the president wants to raise the gas tax to pay for infrastructure, that they'd have to roll back some of the tax bill. And DeFazio was like, that's a stupid 2020 talking point. I mean, so I think that within his own chamber, he feels confident that he has leadership behind him and that he can move a bill. And he is able to work in a bipartisan manner. He he worked with former Chairman Schuster for years, and they would have their tiffs at the dais, and then behind the scenes would work out a deal. And he knows how to do that. And I think he's working closely with now Ranking Member Sam Graves. Yeah. So he is somebody who is capable of legislating and striking a bargain and being reasonable. And I think that his leadership entrusts him to do that.
On the House side of the T&I committee with the new Congress, has the dynamic shifted at all? Like how is the relationship with Graves and DeFazio and among the subcommittee leadership? Is it still fairly cordial? And
my understanding is that it's relatively cordial. They're still working out, but I mean, DeFazio spent a long time in the minority and he knows what it's like. And I think that he is trying to be respectful while also still, leading and pursuing his own policy goals. And so I think that so far he's been, giving Representative Graves a heads up when they're planning to do things, giving him an opportunity to weigh in. So, and I think they are still working together on a surface bill, and they've been working closely on these Boeing investigations. So, especially since Representative Graves is, a pilot. So I do think that they have a good working relationship. And so we'll just have to see, does that continue on, and for how long, there are going to be external factors that might affect their ability to cooperate.
Was it surprising when the president came out in that letter before the meeting where he essentially kind of put down that marker saying that, hey, infrastructure is the goal, but we got to do the USMCA first? It seems like infrastructure is an easier get than a trade deal, especially given the environment we're in.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed when that letter came out the night before the meeting, anybody who's been covering these negotiations, was just sort of banging their head against the table because they just realized that this is not going to go smoothly, and it's going to become the joke infrastructure week instead of the actually productive infrastructure week. I don't think I don't think many people anticipated that he would just walk out of the meeting. And it's possible that that was being laid out there as like a bargaining tool, that he wanted to come into the meeting with some sort of leverage and was trying to change the optics because Democrats had been hammering on about how the president needed to come to that meeting with his ideas and his plan. So it seemed not like a good sign, but it didn't seem like a death knell or anything like that when it happened. More of like a bargaining tactic. And then, you know, things changed rapidly as they tend to do in these new cycles.
Yeah, they rapidly is putting it lightly. I mean, I think it was a indication that, okay, that could be a bargaining chip. Maybe, you know, looking at it saying, okay, in the last meeting you walked out and somehow a $2 trillion number was agreed upon. And that was something which I guess, you know, caused some consternation within, you know, the Republicans in the House and the Senate.
I'm sure it did.
And then they had to kind of figure out how do we, you know, bring this back.
Right.
It was just kind of interesting to see that being laid out right before, like the evening before the meeting.
Yeah. And the letter itself, just the tone of it was just not something you tend to see. It was almost kind of measured in some ways. It was, we're so used to tweets, you know, that it was, there was something about it that was kind of odd. It seemed like somebody else wrote it. Obviously, like the president wasn't writing it, somebody in the staff is, but, somebody who's kind of more in depth on some of these, negotiations had put it together. I don't know who did it, but, it struck me as something that might've even come out of DOT.
Yeah. We kind of talk about Infrastructure Week as every year it's something else that kind of eclipses it. And, you know, really the debate on infrastructure being really focused on deficiencies, right? This is how many bridges are deficient. This is how many roads need to be fixed.
Right.
Do you think that there's a lack of the positive, the kind of this, look at what we can do together if we actually got together and cooperated, you know, for example, you look at some of the projects which, you know, we talk about that our members are doing, which are fairly significant, that it doesn't really get talked about much by members.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it doesn't get talked about them much in Washington. You know, they go home to their home districts and love a good ribbon cutting. You know, I have a I know somebody who was saying that they had a lawmaker coming out, and to get him to come out, they had to put a ribbon around a bus stop so that, like, oh, he'd come out because it was a ribbon cutting. And it was like, you know, it was celebrating that they had added, I don't know, a certain number of new electric bus charging stations or something on those lines. But, you know, so they do like when their projects come out, or anytime you see like a grant notice, DOT is constantly celebrating it, and whoever gets it, usually some appropriator, is very happy that they've gotten a new build grant, which used to be Tiger or Infra Grant or something along those lines. So I think that there is some positive conversation, but to be perfectly honest, from a media perspective, I'm not necessarily going to write a story about the fact that member so-and-so is really happy about the bridge in her district, right? Where it might come into play was, you know, if somebody was saying that they don't want to fund transit because they don't think that their system benefits, and then they wind up getting a big grant. Well, then, like, that's something that you'd wind up covering, right?
Exactly. Something that would actually change their mind or show that this could have a benefit.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, part of the issue is probably just that at least national level reporters are unlikely to report on that kind of thing. Local reporters, well, you know, when you get a new grant for a big transit way, that's something you're going to cover.
Yeah. Is there anything that, I mean, for example, you know, our members are largely CEOs and they're really busy doing their job and monitoring their own businesses. Is there anything happening which they should really be paying attention to that may not be getting as much coverage as it ought to?
I mean, I think it is a wonky area, but I've talked a lot about appropriations. I think that is something where you should be paying attention. Where is the money going? Mm-hmm. Who's benefiting from it? And how is it being justified? So, you know, is Congress giving DOT a lot more instruction on how they should be spending this money, which would signal to your CEOs that they should probably be adjusting how they're pitching their projects? You know, do they need to use a different kind of material because it's sustainable? There's sort of a push towards that. Do they need to be thinking about getting their supplies from US-based companies versus a Chinese company? There's a lot of drama around that on the Hill right now, which if you're not paying attention to and you have any kind of role in infrastructure that has to do with like connectivity. You know, Huawei has been a really big issue with ZTE, or if you're looking at kind of getting rail projects or anything along those lines, the CRRC and BYD companies are two that are have come up in the news a lot. So I think that there are places like that where money is moving, and it's coming out of DOT, which is setting the policy on where they want money to go. And then appropriators are also trying to tell DOT how to spend that money.
Yeah. And I think you raised a really good point, especially when it comes to the technology side of things, because infrastructure these days is not your old style, just bricks and mortar anymore. Now it's technology interconnected exactly. with everything else. So things that are happening in DOT, yeah, that's important, but we also have to look at the other regulators.
True. You know, if you want to look at where, you know, Department of Energy is focusing their efforts and other agencies that are looking to improve the way the country is connecting to each other and smart roads and, you know, better charging stations and things along those lines.
Yeah. The sustainability argument outside of the Green New Deal, I mean, that's probably the best example of something that's gotten a lot of attention. Has there been more of a focus, or have actually let me ask on the Republican side of things, have you noted sustainability, more resiliency was a big deal last Congress. Yeah. Has that kind of continued on? Is the idea of building in a sustainable fashion, more resilient fashion, something which has caught a lot of traction?
I don't know if I'd say it caught a lot of traction, but I would say that people are starting to look at it, and each side has its own justifications for it, right? So you have the Green New Deal sort of environmental push from the Democrat side. And then on the Republican side, it's like, let's not waste our money. Let's stop building things that we're going to have to rebuild in 5 years. Why not just do it right the first time, make a better investment now, and have a better long-term return? And I think that you are seeing some of that. You know, it's a little bit of a sideshow, but there's been all these objections to the disaster aid bill, which includes flood insurance. And some of the more conservative Republicans, especially the Freedom Caucus folks, are particularly worried about just pouring money constantly into communities where maybe it doesn't make sense for people to live anymore. Or maybe if you're going to rebuild those houses, you should build them to be fire resistant. And so they want to make sure that the money is being spent wisely. And so I think that there is a place on either side where they can come together, and you may have some interesting yeah. folks pairing up on that.
Which is an interesting area for us, because being engineers, it's more just the question of, if you're going to build something, you have to build something to last. So it's more like dealing with the world the way it is, not really entering into the politics of it, but just saying, if you're going to build a structure, you're going to do it in such a way where it's efficient, where it's going to last, where it's going to be resilient to the environment, and kind of making that argument. And it's interesting how it's developing on the Hill and how that kind of plugs in, because you have kind of both sides, like you said, more of the social consciousness side on the Democrats and more of the dollars and cents side on the Republican side.
Right. And if you can get those two on the same page, then you might be able to get something done.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the questions that also we have is that, you know, we do a lot of fly-ins, we do a lot of meetings, you know, our members come in, of course, for the convention that we just had, they, you know, flood the Hill. They're having members at the, you know, member meetings at the state level. In districts. Have you noticed, I mean, does that still move the needle? Has anything changed from your view, or is, you know, the prevalence of social media, digital communications, is that offsetting some of it, or is it still, you know, you can't beat a knock on the door?
I think it's both. So I think that you need to both have a presence where you're knocking on the door and you're having a face-to-face time that you're getting, if not with the member or the senator, with their legislative director, with the legislative assistant who focuses on your key issue area, like making it very clear to them why this matters to them and their district and the reelection. And then pressure on social media matters as well. So you kind of have to partner both of those in order to be really effective.
Yeah. So the among the topics that you cover, what's getting the most attention from your readers? What are you seeing the most focus on from the people who consume the information you put out?
I mean, this year there's been a ton of attention on airline safety and, mm-hmm. and, well, I should say aircraft safety, really, because of the Boeing crash and the grounding. That has been an important but a distraction to an extent from the agenda, I think, that they had in terms of moving forward on looking at a surface bill. And that's getting a lot of traction. You know, any kind of updates on that? Because it is a business-focused and it's safety-focused, you kind of get just a ton of interest from both ends. You know, most people will fly at some point in the next year. You know, air traffic has just kept increasing. And so, you know, people are thinking, like, am I getting on a plane that's safe? You know, that's something you want to know. That's getting a lot of attention. And just because of our readership, anytime I write about something that has to do with the Gateway Project in New York, yeah. we get a ton of attention on that. And that's the Harbor Bridge and the tunnel that connect New Jersey to Manhattan. And they're both in pretty dire straits. They're trying to build a second bridge and build another tunnel. And excuse me. Everybody's kind of saying, like, oh, this could collapse at some point and trying to get it done. But there's a lot of politics behind that. So, like, the politics, the business in New York, that's just a natural traffic driver.
Do you think that's a standoff based on personalities between Schumer and Trump more than it is policy? Or
I think it's a ton of standoff between Trump and Schumer. And I think it has become a policy argument because of that. So I think that DOT, you have seen them kind of pull back a little bit on funding for transit projects and rail investment, especially in urban areas. And part of that was trying to choke off the funds for the Gateway Project. And it happened to be that also affected other cities. And then there wasn't necessarily distaste for that among some conservative members and within the administration. So it's kind of a little bit of both.
Yeah, it seems like that could be I almost see that as a linchpin. You solve Gateway, and then we might have a clear path for a lot of infrastructure.
Oh, yeah, I think so. But I mean, that's personality. And,
exactly.
And that's the big question with the president. So, yeah, I mean, I think that if Schumer could get Gateway covered, I don't know. I don't know what he'd give up for that. I don't know. I mean, I think that he'd get a lot of pressure from Pelosi and others not to give, like, the wall for that. Mm-hmm. But it is a huge issue for him, and it's become very personal.
Yeah. It's really interesting, the dynamics in Washington when it comes down to this stuff, because it's the same groups, a lot of institutional memory, and there's a lot of, you know, this is when things get really personal or regional, because everybody kind of wants to have their money or in their projects in their region.
Right.
Which goes back to the idea of earmarks, because that was the easiest way. WERDA was easy to do when you had earmarks and you had to kind of reinvent the wheel mm-hmm. in a post earmark environment. And then, you know, you used to have these bills. Do you see any inkling of a return to, you know, project-specific funding?
You know, Chairman DeFazio is very open to that idea and was trying to get that approved early on, that there could be earmarks. And Nita Lowey, who's the head of appropriations, essentially said, no, we're not going to do that. But it's possible that he might get a special permission to be able to do that for our surface bill. And he said he wanted to do it differently from how they were done before. And it would be very transparent that each member would put on, post online what they were requesting, their justification for it, have some sort of numbers from their state DOTs saying why this was something that they needed and how much local money was going into it. So that if anybody had any questions, they could see, you know, how the sausage was getting made, mm-hmm. essentially.
You know, actually, I didn't realize that was in the offing, a possible dispensation.
Yeah, I mean, he's talked about it, and we'll see what it comes down to in the end. But I haven't heard him close that door entirely. Mm-hmm. And the idea that he might be able to get it just for a specific bill is interesting. Mm-hmm. It might have been easier, or it might be easier if it's a bill that the president's backing, right? And so there's a, you know, everything's in question.
Yeah.
I have not heard him completely close that door yet.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be interesting to see how that develops, as well as everything else from appropriations to president, where he stands on things, the 2020 campaign, and whether anybody's, I mean, other than John Delaney, you know, coming out with his plan.
Right.
If anyone else is going to be coming out with something. And then just, you know, the clock is ticking on the schedule. We're getting close to August, and then you know, things get a little bit tight.
I know. It's possible maybe September, but everybody kind of thinks after that we're not going to see much activity. And so then do we get an extension on a surface bill, or what happens? And that's a big question, I think, that everybody has in our minds.
Politically, do you want to be in the same situation you were a couple years ago, where you're just doing extension?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
And that didn't really work well with the FAA bill for a while, because we kept on doing that. It was just like, you know, plugging a hole, and then...
Well, plugging a hole and didn't create any stability or predictability for people to be able to plan out long-term projects. As your members know, these things, you need the predictability of the funding stream.
Absolutely. Well, there's going to be a lot to look at, and the news is going to be developing quickly. And you can definitely catch Sean's reporting on this, because you know she'll be on top of it as it develops. So really, and also on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle again? It says
S Courtney DC.
So follow her on Twitter, read her reporting in Bloomberg, and just, you know, stay on top of it, because things can change very quickly in Washington, and especially these days, you don't know what's going to happen from week to week. So, Sean, thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll be keeping watch on what happens in Washington.